although a more enlightened mother would say that both are equally good, and according to the choice of the child, if he feels more like playing, perfectly all right. But normally, our present situation being what it is, we begin to assign more value to study than to play. So we advise the child, now don't play, now come to the room and attend to your mathematics or your English or whatever. Let him study. And the child resents it and really feels that now I should not be restrained. And now he begins to ask you also, why do you restrain me? What is wrong with this? What is right with this? This question of right and wrong, good and better, begins to take shape. So there is a stage where the choice is between all equals. In other words, choice is neutral. And whether it takes this or that makes no difference at all. At a little later stage, there is a difference between at least good and better. You might say to the child, look, play is very fine, I don't object to it. But study is better. You must come out of this play and begin to attend and concentrate upon your studies. So for you, the study is better. For the child, study is lesser good than play. Your difference between the two. So you have a situation where you may distinguish between good and better. And you try to appeal to the child to choose the better instead of choosing the good. But at a still later stage, the child begins to manifest a greater choice, not between good and better, but good and less good, in the opposite direction. In the sense that something may be positively bad, a certain kind of food which is harmful to my health, I like to have it, as against another article of food which is very good for my health. And when both are present on the table, when guests have come, many times items of this kind are available. And the child has the habit of choosing precisely that which he likes but may not be good for his health. Now at that time you explain to the child, look, this is not a good choice you are making. It is bad for you. So he starts making a distinction now between good and bad. It is at this stage that what we call a moral problem arises. Starting point of ethical problem is when you make a distinction between good and bad, good and evil. When there is only a choice between everything that is good, there is no ethical problem involved. It's only a question of inclination. Now when the ethical problem begins to dawn in the mind of the child, he is obliged to reflect. Up till now there was no need to reflect. But now when you say this is bad and this is good, you are obliging the child to reflect. What is bad? What is good? And then he is explained what is good, what is bad, or he understands himself what is good, what is bad in his own way. In the first place, you may say that that which may be pleasant may, in certain circumstances, may be really bad. It may be pleasant, but it may be bad. I like to eat ice cream, which is good, which is pleasant. But then I go on eating ice cream beyond my limits. Then you say that this is pleasant, I understand, but it's bad for your health. It's too much for you, you shouldn't take it. So this is at the minimum level, the ethical problem reduces itself between pleasant and good, pleasant and bad. Something may be pleasant and yet good. Something may be pleasant but bad. At a little higher stage, you make a further distinction. You may say that, look, this is pleasant for you, but bad for you. But the same pleasant given to another is good for him. And you give up your pleasure, said that can be enjoyed by another. Now that becomes more complicated state of affairs, where somebody else comes into the picture in consideration. You might be told that although something may be pleasant for you, if you do it, it will reduce the pleasure of others. So don't do it. Now here the criterion of deciding what is good and evil changes. It's not only pleasant that is good. You have now said that even something that is not pleasant may be good because it helps many other people. So this is called the criterion of maximum happiness of maximum number of people. You try to explain to child that you should choose that which is beneficial or that which is conducive of pleasure for the maximum number of people. So whenever you do any action, ask yourself, will it be conducive to the maximum pleasure of maximum number of people? If so, do that. If not, don't do that. And sacrifice something which is not conducive to that. At a still higher stage, a further consideration comes in, which has nothing to do with the criterion of pleasure. That which gives you more knowledge, you might argue, is better for you than that which simply gives you pleasure. So a new argument starts. That which gives you more knowledge is better than what simply gives you pleasure. That which teaches you endurance is better for you than which gives you only pleasure. You should learn how to endure. That which makes you noble by self-giving makes you a better man, gives you greater character, not only knowledge but greater character. That is better for you than the other one. So when the alternatives that are presented are not all equally good, or all good, but of lesser degree or greater degree, where the question of good and evil doesn't arise, it's the second stage.